Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and happy Labor Day Eve. This is Yvonne Smith, Late Night with a Hero. I want to thank my callers for calling in last Sunday, and I want to apologize to you guys and thank Lauren Tenney for coming on the line last week. He's the producer of the show. I had taken some allergy medication, and I laid down and took a nap about 2 hours before the show, and I guess I was so exhausted and everything that I did not wake up. But I want to thank you guys for coming on now. Tonight we're going to have a call-in show and a continuation of last Sunday's show. I don't know how many people will show up to be on the show, but I thought it was important. I did listen to the last Sunday show, and I think it was very important that we had our own Boston Tea Party. And I don't know who's on the line there, but it looks like we got several callers coming in here now. Tara, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I got all the lines open. So if anyone else wants to speak up, they can at this time, just let me know who's on the line. Tara, and it looks like a lot of people from the 617 area code. So I'm going to, I think you're 617, right? Tara?
I called in from 617, yep.
Yep, I'm going to close off everybody except for the people of the 617. But if you do want to say something, say press 1 or star 1. I got a little bit of feedback, and I'll open it up back and forth. Thank you for coming on the show last Sunday. And I just want to recap for the people who didn't listen to the show. I think that you'll want to go back and listen to that show. On that show, Tara was there, Sarah, Courtney, Neil Wilkinson. I heard Maxine's voice on the tape as well, and I think it was a good discussion. And I wanted to follow up tonight by talking about lessons learned and what can we do when we have these kinds of attacks. For people that didn't listen to last week's show, what had happened was the Boston Globe, a hometown newspaper in Boston, Massachusetts, had done a sensational story on people with mental illness portraying us as being very violent. And the community, the survivor community in Boston, did not take too well to this. And they sent letters to the editor. There were several blogs by Sarah Courtney on mine, freedom, and they had a protest. But this is not the first time this has happened. We've had a lot of these. Oh, wow. The phones are really lighting up. We've had a lot of people to be upset about messages in a newspaper. Tara, can you say at least what did you, was there anything that you learned from this particular episode?
I'm sorry, Yvonne, was there anything that we learned?
Would you have done anything different?
I don't think so. And I mean, to be honest, we're not really done yet, I don't think. The Globe, you know, is going to be, it just published another article last Sunday before the show, and they're going to be running, I believe, 3 more articles in the series. So I think the only thing that maybe I would have done differently is tried to get the word out to more people. But I think we made a pretty powerful statement with the people that we had. But I did want to reiterate that we're not done yet. The article that was released last Sunday was perhaps the worst of them so far. It was incredibly stigmatizing. It was very advocating for AOT without coming out and saying that that's what they were doing, talking about, you know, monitoring people for life and, you know, early intervention. So they can monitor earlier. And it was just, so they really, they're not hearing us and we're not done yet.
Well, I can say one thing. I'm glad that you're not done yet. And people can, I have to tell people, if they want to see the articles in the Globe, and if you're not a subscriber, you can only look at 5 articles a month. And what I recommend that people do if they want to do that is they go up and download or either Control A, Control C, and copy it to a Word document. So that it can be circulated on, I have posted it up on some of my, we have a legislative and advocacy page on Facebook so that people can see these articles. But I think that that everybody around the country, whether it's in Massachusetts, and Maine, and Washington, and Pennsylvania, and New York, and Missouri. I think that when we have these attacks by the media and misrepresentations, that as many people that will write in, I think it's better. I am getting so many calls now, so many people listening into this, and if you do want to come in, please press *1. I may have to go down a bit because there are a lot of people that are listening to this tonight. So I'm glad that this is not over.
Yeah, no, August 1st was more of kind of just the beginning. I mean, we've been taking hits like this for a very long time. This may be one of the most blatant and I feel disgusting since it's a series, and you know, we've tried to contact them and speak with them and get some of our points of view represented somehow so that the story is balanced, but they don't seem interested in that at all. And I feel like we've just been kind of taking it because, you know, sometimes we have a difficult time organizing, sometimes in the community we don't see eye to eye, and I think that unless we're all on the same page, I don't know how much we can do because, you know, the more of us there are, the stronger we are. So, you know, we can only make change and fight stigma and do these things together. We can't
do
them.
Well, this is trash. Those articles were trash. Those articles were trash. I mean, anybody that would read even one or two of the articles would not want to marry anybody who had a mental illness, would not want to work with someone who had a mental illness, portrayed us as being very dangerous. And I think that it was just, you know, too bad for that. But I'm glad that you're not going to let up, and I hope that by the blog radio and Facebook and other communications that people will continue to write into the Boston Globe. And that this may be a template for other places because I don't know if, Tara, you've seen it, but the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times also have had some pretty bad stories that seem to promote forced treatment and AOT. And my major thing is they don't describe what these things are. They don't tell the press. Many people, they actually think the AOT is some kind of treatment. You know, they're not even knowledgeable.
They're really promoting this idea that if you have a psychiatric diagnosis, you can't tell that you have a psychiatric illness. Somebody has to be there to tell you and, you know, make sure that you're treated. And people see that as help, and they don't realize that that's a violation of somebody's body in every way. That's taking ownership and control of somebody's body directly out of their hands. And since the average person who hasn't had these experiences has no idea what that loss of control feels like and what that can do to a person, they're really convinced, oh, we're just helping. We, you know, they believe the medications work 100% of the time for all people, and the answer is just, you know, pop some pills and you're all better and you can be part of society. But the second that you stop those pills, you know, and it's just it's a myth, and it's pushed so heavily that that's the narrative, and they think that this is legitimate help for people. Because I mean, it's no different, I feel, than being abducted, you know, just being ripped out of your, you know, comfort and put in, you know, just with no ownership over your body. And nobody can really relate to that unless they've had ownership of their body taken from them.
Well, at least one thing I noticed on that spotlight on mental illness, the Facebook page, it seems as though that Laura Amico, she also was a person that propagated this homicide watch. And I tried to look at the homicide watches that they had had for different cities, and everybody that they had in there looked like they were African-American or non-white that were the shooters. So I think that Naomi or someone else was saying that, you know, last Sunday, that it seemed as though for some reason it seems as though, you know, why is this push right now for all this coercion? You know, it's not just the Boston Globe, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times from time to time. You know, and I seem to have a theory, and I can say this, is that I would look at some of the articles that some of these newspapers had, and it seems as though they're almost word for word out of tact.
Yeah, they're really, really taking pages right out of the Treatment Advocacy Center playbook, and there seem to be a lot of different organizations and groups and individuals promoting that type of philosophy, which I always feel like is a philosophy to make people sick versus help anyone. And as to the timing, I just wanted to add, it seems like there's just a lot of things going on. I mean, politically, we're kind of fractured. As a people, you know, a lot of us are frustrated, just Americans in general. We're frustrated and we want things to change. And I think that, you know, there is an element of social control at play, I feel. But beyond that, this is money. This is big business. And I feel like the studies on long-term use of psychiatric drugs are going to start to be published in the next, you know, 5 years or so. So I almost feel like pharmaceutical companies and kind of the psychiatric system at large are kind of going to be in trouble in a little bit, and it might be a mad dash, a last grab for some extra cash, more people on medications if they're forced to take it. The DSM has been expanded to include so many more diagnoses, and I feel like there's really just a cash grab going on.
Well, I want to remind people that to call in, if you're listening by way of web, it's 267-521-0167. Again, that's 267-521-0167. And Tara is out in the camping, so she says she will be with us as long as she can. I think I'm getting a hint that someone from 540 area code wants to come in.
Yeah, this is me. Hi, Yvonne. It's Marty Felker.
Yes, Marty is calling from Southern Virginia.
I am. And it's beautiful up here in the mountains. It's absolutely beautiful today. And I'm feeling pretty good. So, but I'm certainly not. I'm not feeling good at all about, of course, what's going on politically, and not feeling real good about what's going on in terms of how this movement. And I even hesitate to use that term, but you know, is coming on, and you know, the backlash and so on and so forth, it is pretty ridiculous. I do have to say I was on the line for a while, and I think one interesting thing that is positive for me is that there does seem to be more commonality of experiences seems to lead to, and sharing them seems to lead to, a real potential good. For example, let me just give you one example here. I think it was Lauren that was saying, you know, and I've said this for a real long time, I mean, many dozens of years, is that my experience with this system is, in fact, that I was kidnapped, abducted, mm-hmm. tortured, and survived. And I think that a lot of people, I'd say the vast majority of people that have been involuntarily committed certainly have, you know, that kind of experience. And it's, well, I talked to Lauren, you know, in the past too about that sociologist, Asylums. I'm trying to, I'm having a block on his name.
Has your local papers in Southern Virginia, have they carried any stories, any media stories?
About what?
About mental health, about
I think I mentioned this some time ago. I'm completely, I mean, I have resigned a policy board. You know, a high-level policy board with, which I was on for 15 years, a planning board with, I was a voting member on a board that had the six directors of all the CSBs in Southwest Virginia, plus the director of the state mental hospital in Marion, and I just quit that. There's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me?
You just fed up.
I'm sorry. It's my hearing or something. I didn't quite catch that.
You quit because you're fed up, or you see?
I think that would be a mild way of putting it. There is nothing, mm-hmm. and in the New River Valley, Yvonne, there is nothing. There is no peer anything. If you go and we have a moment, just go on to nrvcs.org, go on to their website, and just put in the search term peer, and see what you get. You get nothing. There is nothing. Nothing.
Well, that might be
They even closed down some time ago the clubhouse. The Mental Health Association, not that that was great, that's been closed. The New River Valley Community Services Board has driven everything out, okay? Mm-hmm. And they are in total control, okay?
Yeah,
and there's nothing that can be done here. And I'm, you know, since Terry Grimes died, you know, 5 years ago or something, now there isn't any, but I was the only consumer advocate in this entire area here in Southwest Virginia with lived experience. So, I mean, you know, certainly, you know, decades of lived experience. So I'm just
you
out
mean
of
advocate,
it.
Yeah.
And the other thing, though, is from personally speaking, I have now quit all psych meds. I got Seroquel some time ago, and now I've stopped even taking Lamictal. I don't not taking any psych drugs whatsoever, and I'm feeling great. So, and I also understand that it's not just being kidnapped. I mean, it was a total misdiagnosis, to say the least, you know, saying that I was bipolar, because it's clear to me now, abundantly clear, that what I, my experiences were reactions, PTSD reactions to childhood abuse that I had from my father. I mean, you know, going from childhood all the way up until early adulthood. So
I think that Naomi, on last Sunday's show, Naomi Pinson brought that out and comparing why the Boston Globe had not why they had covered child abuse with the Catholic Church, and that there is many of us have traumatic experiences from our childhood, and they didn't want to say anything about that. And just as Tara said, that a lot of studies are about to come out, and people will find out that a lot of people have other physical conditions or traumatic conditions that explains their experiences. I have a lot of people here, and I'm trying not to open everybody up, but if you want to come on, press star one or either one. And if you haven't done it before, please do it, because maybe I'm not seeing your hand here that's there. But we do have someone that's coming in from area code 813. Area code 813.
Yes, me, Alfred Jefferson. Can we look going on with Pierce? I'm trying to bring peer support into this down here where I'm at. I'm trying to get everybody to start paying attention to what peers are doing to help peers. Because I'm noticing our peers are doing a lot to help each other.
That's
anybody
true.
Really paying
and
attention to that?
And you're calling from Florida, right?
Yes.
Okay. Did you hear last week's show or the beginning of the show when we talked about? Okay.
Yes, I was on the show.
Is are the newspapers in Florida covering anything on mental health? Are they writing about us negatively? They're not writing at all. Maybe that's a good thing.
No, they're not. But I'm even going to try to get doctors to start paying attention to peer support, because I can't say how many of their patients are actually depending on peer support more than their medication.
We overwhelmingly hear this on the show all the time, that peer support is very
important. But the doctors don't hear about it.
The doctors don't know about it.
That's right.
Well, why do you think that is?
Because we're not talking about it.
Well, they want to keep their jobs and keep us going to them.
I think there are a group of some mental health professionals that would recommend, some grassroots peer support to people if they knew it was out there. The last interaction I had with the mental health system was fortunately not a terrible thing. And I actually have been in touch with some of the people who worked there to let them know about some of the peer support in Massachusetts. And some of them have been very thankful to hear that. And of course, these are people that, mental health professionals that, fully want to look at recovery as an option for everyone, and have kind of started to lean more to the findings of the ACE study and childhood trauma versus the medical model. And so there are some that are trying to move the system in that direction. There's definitely not enough of them. As far as peer support, it's such a powerful thing, and I hope that sometime soon we'll see it in more areas. But honestly, all it takes to build an organization is a group of people who have had these shared experiences that want to support one another. So really, peer support can be established by anyone who wants to adhere to those values of peer support and really be there in a non-judgmental way and start to form groups throughout the country. That is, you know, that is something. We don't need any official.
That's the way we used
to
do it before they had such a thing as peer specialists or anything. People just
What I'm trying to do right now down here where I'm at, I'm trying to get support groups held in hospitals for anybody who's being Baker-acted and has no support at home and doesn't know anything about peer support.
Mm-hmm.
By attending a support group in the hospital while they're in the hospital, they can learn about peer support.
That's wonderful.
They,
that's wonderful that you're doing that.
When they're discharged, they can start attending a support group. I've gone to the DBSA Tampa Bay. They're working with me on this. I've gone to a number of others throughout Hillsborough County. I've even gone to the sheriff. I want them to get involved because this is going to help them with Baker Acts. This will cut down on Baker Acts for them. They agree.
Cut down on what? I didn't hear that.
Baker Acts.
What's Baker Acts?
That's when they force you to go to the hospital involuntarily.
Oh, okay. Yes. I definitely say that would help because force does not help people. One of the things that I liked about the people in Boston when they got together, that they had that Tara, how did you get so many people? How did they get so many people to show up for that protest?
We have a relatively connected community in Massachusetts. We have a lot of advocates, so we're fortunate and we're lucky in that regard. But really, the internet is a beautiful place. as soon as we knew what we were doing and when. We immediately drafted up a flyer and took to the internet. There were agencies that supported it, and some of them hung flyers in different places for people to know about it. Western Mass got together with a charter bus to come out, and a lot of people just showed up on their own just from seeing it online. So the internet has been a godsend in that department.
How did you do that? Email or social media? Or I'm just trying to help other people around the country when things like this happen. How was the word spread?
We emailed, as many people that we had email addresses for in the area that we knew were involved with advocacy and in the psychiatric survivor movement. And from there, it was almost purely Facebook. We started a group on Facebook that started before we had organized the protest on, how do we respond to this? We had quite a bit of interest in that group. There were a lot of people there. We set up a Facebook page. We set up an event, and we just made sure that we spread it like wildfire, and we'd share it ourselves on our pages, a few Probably close to daily, actually, to be fair. We put word out on Twitter, and that was basically all we did.
Well, I think that's great. That's one of the things that social media has done for us. It has allowed people to be connected all over the place. I want to give a plug to Real Mental Health Change, which is going to have a Twitter chat, a trauma-informed chat. People on Twitter, if they go to @RealMHChange, they can find out about this Twitter chat they're going to have to inform Hillary Clinton. We're kind of nonpartisan on this show, but I wanted to put that out so people would know about it. If you go to @RealMHChange, you can find out about how to participate in that because I think that certainly Facebook and Twitter has helped us in so many ways to get the word out about different things. And that has been one of the banes. I'm going to switch subjects. We're going to come back to the media and tax on our community. But this is what's happened when we talk about the current helping families bill up on the Hill. What's happening is that the other people who are so well-funded, who want all this coercion and force, they will send out letters or emails. One organization, every Tuesday, they send out a call for people to send snail mail. Snail mail, the regular mail where you put, I don't know what it is now, 46 cents or whatever for mail to send to their congressmen and senators about this onerous bill. And so much so that our voices are, they're heard, but they're not, there's so many of these other voices that are sending the messages saying that they want things like forced treatment. They want to come in and legislate actually our peer support programs. So if you're listening to Blog Radio, I think that you probably are plugged into social media, but that's something. So you got the word out by Facebook and email. So that's another thing. People want to, when you have meetings and things, you want to get people's email addresses so that when things like this happen, you have a ready list of a place. And you said one of the few organizations got a bus?
Yeah, from Western Mass. The Western Mass RLC got together and rented a charter bus and brought people over to the protest.
Did they know you were coming? I mean, what was the look on their face when they came out? I mean, what was the reaction?
Well, they knew we were coming. When we first got there, there was heavy police presence. There were a lot of cops there. and when we had arranged for a meeting with Scott Allen, the editor of the Spotlight team. So he had anticipated us for 2:30. We were greeted by a couple of paddy wagons and several police officers, and Scott Allen met with us outside in a group.
Scott Allen is the
editor of the Spotlight.
Well, of course they had paddy wagons because, you know, we're dangerous people.
Yeah, it was funny that they did leave. The police presence all but diminished before the end. They had to actually, when we sat down for our organized civil disobedience, they actually had to call them back and get us some new paddy wagons because they had left.
Now, I'd heard on this show, and I apologize, anybody who came in late, I took some allergy medicine last week, a couple of hours before the show, and I went to sleep, and I just never woke up. And I heard that someone was arrested from the show. Had you gotten an attorney beforehand?
No, we had tried to have a legal observer, but it was kind of short notice from when we got it together, and it was a pretty prime vacation week for the legal folk. So we kind of, there were people amongst us who had engaged in civil disobedience before and kind of knew what to expect and knew the process and kind of what would be happening. And we didn't have a lawyer after the fact either, but there was a lawyer at the courthouse that basically, they wouldn't really let us, we were going to just kind of plead guilty and move on, but the judge and the lawyers were really trying to talk us out of that. And so there was one guy that kind of took us all on just to give us some advice, and it was nice of him. It was helpful. And the prosecutor wasn't really interested in pushing it too much, and it was resolved easily. Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't for that lawyer stepping in and be like, no, I got you guys, we probably would have all pled guilty and had records. But
mm-hmm. But so that's what I mean by lessons learned. So you had a database of people, names. Even though you didn't have a formula, you had people that were knowledgeable about civil protests before. Were people briefed before they actually got on the bus or during the bus ride over? Or
Were people what? I wasn't on the bus, so
okay.
Did they what on their way over, though?
I mean, did anyone speak to them and tell them what they would expect? I mean, I didn't know. There are several people from the 617 area code, so if anyone wants, I've opened up the lines for everyone that's 617. So if anyone was there and they want to say, or if you're not from a 617 area code and you want to press star one.
I don't know if you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Julie, this is Julie. I didn't know if I was on. I kept pushing one and star one. I didn't hear any confirmation. This is Julie Green. I used to live in Massachusetts, actually, from the age of about 6 months until most of my life I lived in Massachusetts. I went to Lexington Public Schools, attended Lexington Public Schools for my entire public school life. For anybody who is from out of state, that is the town just situated just right next to McLean Hospital. We were actually right near McLean Hospital, and I frequently rode my bicycle right by there. McLean, if anybody is from out of state, again, McLean Hospital and a very old state hospital, Metropolitan State Hospital, were right next door to each other. And
were you at the
right on the
were you at the Globe protest? Were you at the Globe protest?
Oh, no. I left Massachusetts quite some time ago, a few years ago. The reason why I left was because I was very afraid that I would be very shortly forced into psychiatry and possibly incarcerated psychiatrically. And if that were to happen, I would either invariably end up in state or invariably end up on forced medication because I was afraid. Well, first of all, I think I'm not sure that people really know my story. In fact, probably most people don't. Way back, I started a blog back when people were not even blogging and didn't know what blogs were, and I was on the internet when people weren't on the internet. I started my blog in 2005, and it was just an innocent blog about daily life. But after I graduated with my master's in fine arts and creative writing, which, of course, psychiatry didn't want me to get and said, you're not really capable of it anyway, why don't you go to day treatment? Well, I got a master's degree. I started writing about what had happened to me, what had really happened to me in the hospital. And this was after I'd already had a book published and everything. And suddenly they caught wind of what I was doing. That's when the quote-unquote care got worse and worse and worse. And then I just had to turn around and I suddenly realized, wait a minute, this has been all wrong. First of all, they never addressed my eating disorder for 30 years. And secondly, this isn't care, this is abuse. Then I really started writing because all those years I justified everything. I had said, oh, they're just doing their job. We need this. We're violent people. We don't really deserve rights. I mean, like all the patients are all saying, what are rights? We don't need rights. If you talk about rights, you're paranoid, right? It's a disease. So then I woke up to the reality and I realized, wait a minute, this is all wrong.
So you flee
so
the state. I fled the state.
And, right, exactly. What happened was in 2011, they began to catch wind that I was writing publicly about what had really happened. And they tried to silence me in every way they could. It just got worse. Whenever I was inpatient, they would, the treatment got worse. In every way, they tried to silence me. Twice they tried to put me in state hospital. I got threatened, abused. In 2011, it just about killed me. I have diabetes insipidus, which is a kidney condition that came from lithium, and they tried to deprive me of water. which will kill a person with diabetes insipidus. And when I got out of there, they said it hadn't happened. Yeah, it did happen. And then after that, they tried to put me in a state hospital, shut me up because they knew I was going to blog about it. Well, I did. And I...
Well, we're glad that you wrote your... We're glad that you wrote your thing. I want to ask you a question. I don't want to cut you off from your story.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
So you left the state of fear. Have you heard or you read anything about the Boston Globe articles?
Oh, of course. Of course I did. I read the heinous stories until my subscription ran out, but I don't want to support them, so I don't want to pay them 99 cents, but I read a few of them.
How do you think, what do you think, since you were fearful to leave the state, and this is one of my concerns, is that what these articles do is they cause people to go underground.
I can tell you right now, if I still live there, it would be worse because people would be running away from me. I mean, they're already I was so socially othered, I couldn't get anybody to go out to coffee with me. They would look at me and turn away. I could not get a single, well, I got one person to go out to coffee with me once in like about 2 years. No one would speak to me on the phone. No, but it was terrible. And nobody understood. It got worse because the more nobody would speak to me, the angrier I got. And I felt like running up to somebody and just, oh, my God, will you just please be my friend or something? And it was 2 years of absolute complete isolation. And yet I was living in the most densely populated town in the state. It
so you were isolated and you were shy.
Yes. I was isolated in a packed like sardines apartment building. I was shunned by others. I was loathed, literally loathed. And I was kicked out of the church.
Mm-hmm.
It can happen, and it really can happen. I was loathed. I mean, I was kicked out of my church, blamed for saying that the hospital had abused me. I was blamed for saying that the church was discriminatory, not only against me, but against other people with mental illness in the church who were called mentally ill in the church.
Mm-hmm.
When I say mental illness, I mean quote-unquote mental illness, because I, too, don't see anybody as mentally ill. I think it's just a name. It's, you know, we all agree on
so
that.
So what do you think about
the label,
the
word.
Over, what do you think about the 150 to 200 people who came out in face of because this is what a lot of people have been saying also about our not going very strong in other areas, that people are afraid for their own safety. What do you think about those 150, 200 people that came out and those people that, like Tara and Sarah, that wrote blogs? I mean, I think that what he was doing,
would have been there.
And early on was he wrote. Mm-hmm.
I would have been right there. Me and my dog would have been in Boston with the protesters. I would not have been. I let me tell you, for a long time, I've been afraid, you know, ambulances, cops, and things like that because of the abuse. But I feel so strongly about what happened to me, and I think, you know, I had some distance on it and some time and everything. I'm not so afraid anymore because at this point, after I have written to the FDA about my experience, a really lengthy piece, 27 pages, about my ECT experience in 1996 and 97.
Oh, I might have to PM me your information, because we might want to have you on about your ECT experience.
I'm certainly willing to speak about it, but I put that up on the with the FDA, and I feel that kind of immunes me from future for psychiatry, because I feel that it kind of exonerates me and in a way, and the fact that they're not recognizing my medical condition called diabetes insipidus for 27 years. It's just ludicrous. And the fact that they never treated my eating disorder for 30 years, it's just inexcusable. It's gross, There are so many incidents.
Let's hold that thought for a moment. And Carol, are you still there? Carol, you still there?
I'm still here.
Do you have any ways, and a state, Julie, stay here. Do you have any other ways that if people want to get involved with what's happening in Boston, what's the best way for them to do that or keep abreast of what's happening with the globe?
Well, what we're trying to do, we also got a domain name, and we have a website set up with not much on it. It's thepeoplespotlight.com.
The People Spotlight. I love it.
Yeah. that was what we ended up kind of calling.
Sarah, I personally know Gideon Gill. I personally know him. I grew up side by side with him and his twin brother. He's one of the newscasters on one of the, you know, he's one of the big newscasters on one of the news shows. I never knew it because they didn't have a TV, but he's a biggie in Boston. I knew him and his twin brother when they were knee-high to grasshoppers, both of them. I went to Hebrew school with both of them. So, you know, I got it on him. I know all the dirt on those two kids.
Are you saying that you can get her on the show, or what are you saying?
No, he's a newscaster. He's a big newscaster, and I think he's a biggie in the Boston Globe now. I think he does the health section. No, he's a childhood friend of mine, fellow school kid, mine in my town. That's all I'm saying. He's not a friend of mine now, but I'm saying I got all the dirt on him. I remember everything from his childhood.
We did a lot of things when we were kids that we don't do being adults. But one of the things I wanted to add is that we need to develop relationships with the press. And I think I heard last week that you and Sarah, Tara and Sarah, were saying that you had during the protest or the demonstration against the Globe that you actually had a lengthy conversation with them. And I would suggest that people do that with the press, whoever covers mental health in their community. Unfortunately, I guess the Globe has a special section for it, right? Or just for that particular segment?
No, right now it's just the Spotlight team. Working on that series. I don't think they have a mental health, like a mental health writers. I know that some outlets like the Huffington Post have like mental health bloggers. I don't think the Globe does the same thing. If they do, I'm not fully aware of it, so they're not doing it very well.
They may have, I know the Huffington Post has Daffy and occasionally they might even have E.T., but I think
something I suggested on that in America, but I don't know where I suggested it actually, but it got shut down, was that we need to attack this on all fronts, because not everybody even reads the newspaper, but we do have a lot of artists, awesome people who do art, people who do vocal performances, people who do poetry, people who do all kinds of media. And we need to attack on those fronts, too. I'm thinking of Pamela Spira Wagner in Vermont, who does this absolutely awesome art. Elizabeth Kenney, who's been on TED Talk, she does this fabulous one-person show called Six. Is about her experience, her 3 years' experience in psychiatry. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. She's on TED Talks. Brilliant. She's an actress. And there's some fabulous graphic artists who can do stuff. Corinna out in Kansas City, she does
those are great things, and we're doing them. One comment that I remember from listening to the show from last Sunday, that was Sarah David Dial Courtney was saying that oftentimes we're talking to each other in the bubble. And she was saying that one of the things that came out of it, of their talks with the Globe was they got a op-ed piece published, and I think that Daniel Fisher also had something published, and I know that Susan Rogers is quite prolific in writing to the New York Times and Wall Street Journal, but sometimes we have to get out of that bubble, and when these things occur, you know, another third action step was finding out who's good at writing or editing letters, because when people read things, whether it's the Boston Globe, New York Times, Washington Post, Sacramento Bee, you know, because they see it in the paper, they think it's true. So it's really important for us to get outside of that bubble and to write op-ed pieces. If there's something that we like, if there's something we know that's not right, is to make sure that we do those things. The art thing is very important too, because we always can express our own dissatisfaction with things through art, but also trying to get other people who may believe everything that the press may tell them that is not so. I want to remind people we're live online. It's our call-in number is 267-521-0167, 267-521-0167. And we're talking about the reaction of the Massachusetts community to the slander of the Boston Globe, that they're having a series. Tara, they have one more article left. Is that right?
I believe they have three. I believe it's going to be a six-article series.
Three more articles left.
Yeah. I know for the next article, is all that they've mentioned is that they're going to travel out of state to see how people or other states are running their community care. So I have no idea what state they're going to. There was some speculation. Somebody mentioned Texas. I have no idea if that's where they're going to go for that. But
you think the Boston Globe is going to pay for them to go on a plane to go to Texas?
Well, they went somewhere out of state. I just don't know where yet, and we won't know until the next article is released. And
have they even bothered to connect with some of the peer organizations that have, like, peer respite or something in the state, you know?
They have and they haven't. They've been told about a lot of these things. During the protests, Brian McGorry was out. He's the editor of the Globe in general. Jenna Russell from the Spotlight team was out. And we were talking to them and they, you know, they were brought some of this information, but it doesn't seem like they want to do much with it. I don't know what's coming in the next three articles, but my feeling on the way we've been kind of treated through this whole thing is kind of like children. Like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, thanks for saying something.
And pat you on the head.
Want to, yeah. So, and then, you know, they responded to our protest, and their response to our protest was kind of demeaning yet again. And, you know, they're saying that we want the same thing, which, you know, they're not telling us what they want. So I'm reluctant to say we want anything that's similar, because if you're not upfront with us about what your objective is here, then we don't trust you at this point. So, but they also tried to say the Spotlight series was done with great empathy. And my feeling on it is, you know, it's kind of that meme that goes around the internet, you know, you don't get to hurt somebody and then, you know, tell them that you didn't. You know, if somebody says that you hurt them, you don't get to make the decision that you never hurt them. It still happened. And they kind of just didn't acknowledge any of that. And one of the things I brought up with Scott Allen, the Spotlight editor, was the way they presented things in the first article when they were talking about these people that had committed homicide. they weren't necessarily people with psychiatric diagnoses. They were people that were, quote unquote, showing signs of mental illness. And I said directly to him, you know, that's a witch hunt. When you're just vaguely deciding from the outside, like, oh yeah, that's a sign of mental illness over there. You're now asking people to look at other people's behavior as if it's a witch hunt.
Well, you know what? Because someone does something that is not within an acceptable norm doesn't mean that they're crazy. They actually are sometimes, you know, people that, you know, that's part of the way they are. They're monsters. You know, we have, you know, people that commit all kinds of horrible atrocities, and people want to say that they're mentally ill. And they may, or, you know, there is no test. The thing about it, there is no test for mental illness.
I think this whole thing was planned well in advance. The whole series, the Spotlight series, and this is very carefully orchestrated to manipulate the public mind. The movement and the statement of this, the protest certainly did not fit in with their plans, and of course they were dismissive because they don't want to hear it. It doesn't fit in with their plans to continue the series because it was all pre-planned. It's all a way to manipulate the public, and it's a way to continue the genocide because that's what is planned. We all know that's coming down.
Now, Julie, we're going to come back to you, but Tara is going to be leaving us in a minute. Tara, is there anything you'd like to say before you go?
Yeah. So we do have the website set up, thepeoplespotlight.com. Like I said, there's not really anything on there. We still only have a flyer from the August 1st protest, but we're hoping that we can collect stories of people's experiences within the mental health system. If people have writing skills of their own, you know, they can absolutely write up a piece that we'd like to put on the website. If not, if somebody
how would they do that?
Story up here on the there's a link to our email, and I'll tell you what that is, but it's probably easier to read it. It's just the.peoples.spotlight@gmail.com. And if people want to tell their stories and, you know, maybe don't feel comfortable writing them themselves or could use a little help, we do have a couple of writers, myself included, that will help people frame their stories, and we'll get them on that website. In the long run, we'd really like to maybe publish a couple of anthologies and get them out there so that people start to understand and hear these stories, because even though I feel like we're shouting them a lot of the time and we are sharing them and we're trying to share them in meaningful ways, it seems like they fall very much on deaf ears. And you can't really convey the emotion of the thing without sitting down to really write a narrative about it. And I feel like if we can get our stories out there to the media and to the general public, people will start to look at the system in a different way. And I feel it's especially important for people who have been in the system since they were young, because there is a lot of focus on early intervention right now. And for myself, my entrance to the mental health system was at 7.5 years old. And, you know, everything we're doing to adults trickles down to children. And I think people have more empathy than they do adults.
Send your email and the push column to me, or at least if you can put it up on our Legislative Attack Facebook page, and I'll circulate it around to other places as well, you know, unless it's just for Massachusetts only, so that we can, you know, get those stories out there. I know your battery's dying. Tara's out camping, so we really appreciate her coming on again tonight, and you're a real hero. you and your band of 150 other Boston Tea Partiers.
Thank you very much. But, yeah, like I said, it's not over. We're going to keep fighting. I've been preparing for this fight my whole life, so I don't know about anyone else, but I'm in it for the long haul. And, you know, we're not done. So between the People's Spotlight website and a big organization that was involved also was Empower in Boston, we'll get the word out there about anything else we're doing. We're hoping in the long run that we can really kind of take a stand nationally and really start to get people to understand what's really going on.
We can't let these newspapers come in and tell these lies. That's the thing, is that they're, and the public just doesn't know. And it's really big fear mongering. It's not saying that some people haven't been committed a violent act, but that's just like a redheaded person killed somebody. Are we going to take away the rights of all people that have red hair? You know, it's really, it's unconscionable. It's really like Nazi Germany, the kinds of things that they want to do with, like, the preparation that the Nazis did. But thank you again for coming on, and I hope that you'll be able to come on again at some other time.
Thank you very much. And, I hope to speak with you again soon.
Okay.
Have a great night, and enjoy the rest of the show, everyone.
Okay. We have a lot of people here. If you press 1 or star 1, that will let me know that you want to come in. In fact, we got a lot of area codes from 802 and 315. Let's see. So if anyone wants to come on the show to come on, we have open lines now. And if you want to talk about something else other than the Boston Globe, I'd like to hear what types of people you'd like to have on the show in the future. In fact, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up some other lines, 315, 310, a few at a time. Your lines are open now. Because sometimes we don't.
Yvonne, I'm just checking out that website that Sarah just mentioned. And checking out the Spotlight.
The People's Spotlight.
The People's Spotlight. Yeah, I did not even know that existed because I don't have Facebook. This is Julie again. Yeah, I'm checking it out and checking out everything it says and noticing the petition here. I'm certainly signing it and adding a bit of information, to my
great,
signature.
Great, wonderful. Great, wonderful. So I'm opening up some of the lines in case people have things they want to say. Because, and if not, if we have deep silence for more than 5 minutes, we'll end the show. But I don't know if Lauren Tenney is there. She has some shows that she's going to have for the future that she'd like to make the announcement about.
I am here. Thanks, Yvonne. We will be having some shows coming up in the near future, and hopefully we'll be releasing a schedule for Thursday nights within the next week or so.
Okay. This is Lauren Tenney, the producer of the show. This is totally a voluntary effort. I'm very thankful that Lauren has let me have one of the slots on the show. We had had I was on hiatus during the summer, but we're going to be back with a vengeance. And if you know of other shows or other heroes from your community, or if there's something going on in your state, please contact us. You can always go down in the shows. There's a comment section for the shows. You can always go down there and make a comment as well. But
hello, Yvonne?
Yes.
It's Maxine. I'd like to say something.
Of course. Go ahead, Max.
Thank you. Anyway, since it's been announced that there's going to be three more articles by the Boston Globe that I was not aware of, I just learned about it on the show today. That's very interesting. The opportunity to utilize the Facebook page that the Boston Globe has provided is really important. It's called Spotlight on Mental Health Care. And there's a lot of discussion going on. People are listening. People are interacting. And it's really necessary for people to take advantage of this opportunity that the Boston Globe has given.
Sure, because they know nothing about us.
Right, and they're learning. So the thing is to not give up. Just because mental health policy people and NAMI people and treatment advocacy center people are posting, there's no reason to be afraid of them. You know, usually when we try to post their groups and speak to them, they just unsubscribe us. The Boston Globe is not doing that. They are letting us speak. They are letting us post.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's an unusual opportunity to get some exposure on where we're coming from.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, Maxine, I think that I will, on the legislative page, I have put up the last article up there that we should start posting, because as I said, the Boston Globe kind of limits, and some people, after they've said such bad things about us, they don't want to subscribe to it. But what happens is most newspapers, even the Washington Post, if you're not a subscriber digitally, you may be able to be limited to a certain amount of, looking at a certain amount of articles a month. And
it's five that you can see a month, but the thing is, the discussion that's going on the Facebook page that they've provided is important.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. It definitely is very important. And
well, no one is from joining that group. It's a closed group. All you got to do is ask to join, and they subscribe you right away, and you can post anything you want. They're not going to unsubscribe you or,
there may be one or two people that have been unsubscribed, but you're right that they're unless you attack a person, they're not going to do it. And also I'll put a plug in for our legislation and attacks on survivor community page. Because if you go to that page, there's a file section, and I'm trying to put up those, the last, August 29th, the last story they had was The Broken Covenant, and that's there in a PDF format, so you don't have to go and use up your...
I'll also put it on the Ledge site with announcing that they're doing... The Boston Globe is doing three more articles, and to participate, go to the Facebook page that they have provided.
Good point, and we should put that up there too.
And Yvonne, I have one announcement.
Go ahead.
On September 9th, there's going to be a national protest to support the Prisoners Resistance Movement. And specifically in Wisconsin, there are currently prisoners who are on a food refusal humanitarian campaign to try to call attention to the fact that they have renamed solitary confinement administrative confinement, and the prison systems are trying to argue that it is quote unquote non-punitive. And it is without any, so it can go on indefinitely. And the prison's response to the prisoners' refusing food is that they are being force-fed through nose tubes, which is torture. And so the prisoners attempting to call attention to torture is causing them to be further tortured. And on September 9th, there's a national day of protest to call attention to abuses of prisoners and to support the prisoner resistance movement. I have a open letter to Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin and several of the prison wardens about the use of solitary confinement and the sham of administrative confinement. And I'm hoping that we're going to be able to have some people who are really involved in this on the show in the near future. But they're so busy right now with doing the action. So hopefully within a short time. But, you know, if we don't get involved in the prisoner resistance movement, we've kind of, you know, thrown our hands up about the whole thing. And so it's another opportunity.
I think that was what Naomi was saying last week I heard on the show, that we've been isolated as a group, you know, that people should be getting involved in not only what's happening with people that have a mental health label, but like the Black Lives Matter, you know, all forms of stigma.
Thank you. And we're, the Talk with Kenny show is officially one of the endorsers of the Black Lives Matter movement and the vision for Black Lives.
Yes, we should, because we cannot. That's the problem with a lot of the legislation that's going on now, is that I give the example that we're like, our voice is not heard. We're like a baby with a slingshot trying to hit down a Boeing 747. So we need to come together. There's a lot of commonalities between the groups. I don't know. Maxine, you still there?
This is Ty, Amy's son. I'm listening with her. I have something I'd like to say.
Go ahead.
They've been rebranding institutionalization and restraints for decades with children. Our state, Colorado, at one of our PAC, had an announcement that we've eliminated restraints and seclusion with youth. And then I asked them, well, what do they do? And they call it interventions now. So, you know.
You just renamed it.
Yeah, so this has been happening for a long time, and particularly to our most vulnerable populations that have very few allies, at least in our state. They just don't care about it.
For people that don't know, your state.
Colorado.
For people that don't know which. Colorado, so.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say that they've been doing this for a while, you know, like interventions and instead of restraints, and then instead of seclusion, they call it quiet rooms, or it's the same thing, and very, very traumatic.
They do the same thing in our state hospital. They have a room. They don't call it, they call it a comfort room, but it's like a bare room that has nothing in it except for bean bags. And it's locked. And I said, that is not a comfort room.
Yeah, and they're an assault on all the senses. I've done a little bit of trauma-informed care work, and for some agencies that have wondered why these are so difficult for children, but there are, you know, if you go into one of the rooms, they generally smell really bad. A lot of times you have your face pushed into carpet or tiled, and you know people have peed or smeared feces or vomited or sweated on these rooms. So if you're unlucky, then you get like a mouthful of that. And generally, when you're being restrained or secluded, like myself, it happened a lot. You know, it's you're fighting for your life, they don't listen to you when you say you can't breathe. You know, they'll listen to you when you stop moving, but not when you say you can't breathe. But
or
you know,
when
having
you're
your ha- yeah,
or
having
when
hand-
you're deceased.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say that they've been doing this for a while, and you know, it's an assault on all five of the senses. If you're really unlucky, The sounds are generally fluorescent lights and people are screaming in the background. And if you have to walk by one of those rooms, then you're triggered because you have to endure someone in pain and suffering and you're being told to look the other way. So that's been my experience, at least. I'm going to go back on you.
A lot of people. Okay.
I just wanted to say
a lot of people. I just sent Lauren
a message that saying that in regards to the feeding tube, this is Julie again. I have, you know, having had been in eating disorders care quite a bit, I've been tubed myself. I've also been witness to tubing. And I believe sincerely that tubing, if forced and if done against the patient will, by all means is rape. There's no question in my mind it is rape. It's not always rape. I mean, if a person wants the tube and is willing and it isn't forced, it isn't rape, but it can be rape. And also, I also believe that if a person is repeatedly threatened and in a vicious way, we're going to tube you if you don't, you know, in a vicious and threatening and scary way, that too is, it's like you're being threatened to be, that you're going to be raped. And it's very scary for extremely young children and anybody in a vulnerable position. Yes, it's torture. Of course it's torture, as is forced catheterization, which is often done in emergency rooms, and threats of catheterization, which is done to young people in emergency rooms. If you don't pee immediately while we stare you down, we're going to catheterize you. That's rape. So I just thought I'd mention that if we're going to at some point be talking about the situation with the prisoners being tortured like that. That's horrible. Absolutely horrible. Yes, it's rape.
Well, I want to say also
children regularly.
If people don't know that, you know, Baltimore Police Department's report came out, and I think about the third page, they speak about the police's heavy-handedness toward people labeled with mental illness. And I'll post that as well on our legislation Facebook page. There's a place for us to, there's legislation and attacks on the survivor community so that people can see that as well. It's quite meaty. It's like 170-some page, but not even into the fifth page it talks about how these are mostly people who have mental health issues that are heavy-handed by the Baltimore police. I think Naomi from Massachusetts mentioned that last Sunday night as well. Anyone else for the good of the show? Anyone else have any announcements or comments they'd like to make? Okay, I want to thank everybody for being on the, coming on and listening to the show. And if you miss a show, if you miss last Sunday's show, you can certainly go on Blog Radio and Blog Lauren Tenney, and you can actually hear last Sunday's show. It was really tremendous. Have a good night and a very good Labor Day. Thank you very much.
Thank you.